Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Paris Schutz. Will the $30 million deal to construct tent cities ease Chicago's migrant crisis?
The mayor says he wants 1,600 asylum seekers moved from police stations to tent cities as soon as possible after the city signs a contract with GardaWorld Federal Services.
It is time. We deserve work permits, too.
Meanwhile, President Biden authorizes Venezuelan asylum seekers to get work permits after months of lobbying from Illinois officials. Week one of the state's new law eliminating cash bail begins without any major hiccups, as some law enforcement still worries who might be let back out on the street. The city treasurer in legal and ethical hot water over allegedly making city workers perform personal duties for her on city time. And in sports, the Cubs' playoff chances on life support as the season enters its final weeks. And a chaotic week for the bumbling Bears as their defensive coordinator abruptly resigns.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Greg Pratt of the Chicago Tribune, Sarah Schulte of ABC 7 Chicago, Melody Mercado of Block Club Chicago, and Jim Rose, newly retired from ABC 7 Chicago after 41 years. Stellar career there. Welcome, Jim Rose. It's great to have you here. Let's get right to it. Sarah Schulte, tell us about this $30 million contract with GardaWorld and how it will impact the migrant situation.
The point is trying to get to decompress some of the police stations, get some of the 1,600 people out. Whether it will do that or not, I'm not sure it will. This company that they have quietly signed a deal with last week for $30 million without telling any aldermen. It's a controversial company. It's a company that actually has been used by the state of Florida and Governor DeSantis to actually send migrants to Chicago, which is a little bit odd. I think that the point of this company is they're supposed to build these shelters, I guess, temporary shelters, depending on what you want to call them. They're winterized.
They have cots and kitchens.
Yeah, the city wants to call them base camps, winterized base camps. They kind of want to get away from that terminology of tents because they're not really tents. But they are contracted to operate them and run them.
Why did the mayor do it this way, Greg Pratt, as opposed to have maybe an RFP or go to city council?
Speed. Mm-hmm. Speed, what's faster than base camp is yurt. And if you get yurts, you can do that faster. You can get it set up. You can spend more money. You don't have to go through the debate. And that's what they're going for.
Melody Mercado, the state has a contract with this company, too, and they've only really paid a teeny little fraction of what they had signed up for. Is there a chance that this isn't really going to happen as planned?
I feel like it's a little early to tell at this point, but I feel like Chicago does need a solution, and it needs to happen fast. Winter is coming, as everybody's been saying, and winter in Chicago is known to be brutal.
Winter is coming. Where have I heard that? What TV series have I heard that? Jim Rose, do you feel confident the city finally has this under control as we've seen months and months of pictures of asylum seekers sleeping at police stations and sitting out on sidewalks?
I don't feel comfortable that they have it under control. I mean, it's a shame that this is such a humanitarian crisis that people are coming up here and we're about to approach, the dead of winter, for us. And it's so sad that no solution can be made right now. And I'm hopeful that the mayor and some of the aldermen, or all of the aldermen, can get together and solve this humanitarian crisis. Because America is supposed to have a golden door. People are supposed to be able to come here and live the life and enjoy themselves and prosper and multiply and be members of society. And that's happened so many times in the past, and to see it happen like this, it's just heartbreaking.
Well, part of that is being able to work. And Sarah Schulte, finally, after months and months and months of Illinois lawmakers begging for this, President Biden signs an executive order for work permits for these Venezuelan migrants, because that represents the bulk of who has been coming recently. Is this a game changer here?
It's a game changer for some, not for all, because he did put a deadline. It has to be Venezuelans who have come here before July 31st. It grants an 18-month? Is an 18 month, mm-hmm. Yeah, 18 months. And they are could be expected to get a work permit in 30 days. But, it's a process. It's a lengthy process. A lot of these migrants have to get immigration attorneys or someone to help them fill out a very, lots and lots and lots of paperwork to get this done. So, I mean, I think that people will get some work permits. Whether it's going to make a big dent in the amount of migrants that we have in the city of Chicago, I'm not sure. I mean, if you remember, we still are getting busloads of migrants coming in here every single day.
All that said, you have this situation where every time, you know, the Johnson administration opened up, I think, 8 shelters since May, and as soon as they open them up, they fill out. So the base camps, the yurts, they're in the, you got to hope that people are moving out, you know, that people are getting self-sufficient, and that's the way out of the crisis. So in that way, it's a step forward, but it's not slowing down in Colombia and in Panama, and the people still keep coming. So you wonder whether or not it's going to continue to be whack-a-mole. But it is the best way forward is self-sufficiency.
Melanie Mercado, you're in touch with a lot of these immigrants' rights groups and these communities. Are they excited about the prospect of having at least work permits now and how that could perhaps speed up them getting some kind of permanent shelter?
I think that the groups are definitely hopeful. You know, this will, they think that this will definitely help move the process along to get people out of shelters and get them into more permanent housing situations. You know, this has been said many times, in order to be able to do that, people want to work, and we want to make sure they have safe working conditions, and a work permit can help them do that. I think the other side of it is, one thing that I didn't know is it's really expensive to apply. It's about $400. And so I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had. If these people haven't been working and maybe they don't have funds available to them, is that another aspect that we need to be thinking about in terms of mutual aid or maybe some grants or something?
Maybe that's something the city or some of these nonprofits are going to take up. Let's move on to some legal news. Sarah Schulte, for the first time, there is now no cash bail in the state of Illinois. This is week one under this system. Any major hiccups in any of the different prosecutor's offices or courtrooms?
Well, any prosecutor outside of Cook County, yes, will say yes, there's absolutely some major hiccups. I mean, all those, the prosecutors that were against this from the beginning are kind of lining up and sending out press releases and of cases this week. I know that Bob Berlin in DuPage County, there was a situation, I guess, yesterday in Hinsdale where there was a kind of smash and grab that had to do with somebody who was released. And, you know, they were very quick to let the media know about that, offer up videotape of that. And, you know, I think that, that these prosecutors were, you know, ready to go. I mean, they knew exactly that the minute this thing went into effect on Monday, they were waiting for that case to, you know, let everybody know. Now, you have to remember how many people were let out, you know, were released that didn't go out and commit crimes. I mean, I think you do have to put it in a, into it a bigger context of, you know, one crime is a bit, you know, is too many. But, you know, the whole purpose of no cash bail is so people that have low level crimes don't have to linger in jail for a long time because they can't afford it. And that's the purpose.
And that starts a vicious cycle that they can't get out of. And so prosecutors go through this extra step now for detention hearings if they want to argue for detention before trial. And then it's up to a judge. Jim Rose, a lot of law enforcement still fear that this is just going to lead to folks that are a danger to the community being back on the street. Do you fear that?
I do, and there's a lot of law enforcement people who are backing off from their responsibilities, perhaps using this as an excuse to say, well, since we don't have, you know, this cash bail situation and more criminals are getting out on the street or people who they think are criminals, when I see something happen, maybe I don't put myself at risk and do what I'm supposed to do as a police officer. I think the whole problem starts legislatively. It starts down in Springfield. The laws of the state have got to change. For instance, if you take a look at the carjackings in just Chicago alone, the majority of the carjackings are taking place with kids who are 17 years or younger, and they get released to their families 24 hours later. In fact, we had a story on our air on Channel 7 a couple of months ago where a police chief from one of the south suburbs came up and he said, I have to release these three kids to their parents who had these kids had stolen a car, did a joyride, killed a 75-year-old man, and had to be released because the investigation had not been completed yet. Now, the sad thing is now they're out and about. Are they going to commit another crime? We don't know. But the problem is legislatively, and we've got to get ourselves off of the fact that when somebody commits that kind of a crime or a crime with a gun, They need to be held responsible for it, and perhaps maybe it'll teach them a lesson as well, and teach society a lesson.
You know, the responsibility is really with the judges on this. I mean, first of all, the judges need information from police and prosecutors about each defendant. But, you know, in the end, it really, the judges have to take each case and really do diligence here. I mean, they really have to, you know, it used to be you just kind of like, okay, you know, $100,000. I mean, they didn't really have
to. And these bond hearings go by.
Yeah, they go like
seconds.
This. And, right. You know, now they really kind of on the federal level, you know, they have to really, really take these cases and really look at them in detail.
Greg Pratt, the General Assembly did tweak this law many times in response to some of these concerns to give judges more leeway or perhaps put more crimes under the umbrella of such that you could seek out detention for. Have they tweaked it enough? Do judges have the tools they need to make sound decisions?
Whether they have the tools or not, they're not using them. You have a lot of instances where people are being released and they're repeat offenders, they're repeat violent offenders. Mm-hmm. And this is a conversation where there was a problem, which is people who have low-level crimes being held in a way that destroys their lives and that hurts everyone because it damages stuff. But you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say that the dude who has shot three different people gets to get out without bond because he didn't kill them. And then he goes in, what does he do? He shoots person number four and person number five. And so you want to see whether judges are doing that. And there's reason to believe that they are not being as judicious as they should be.
All right, well, we're just going to have to follow how this plays out over the next several weeks. We should note that there were zero reported homicides last weekend, which is, in a warm weather weekend, I don't think I remember that in Chicago in a long time. Melody Mercado, on a related note, Larry Snelling, he is going to be the new CPD superintendent. He got confirmed by a city council committee today. Full city council considers it next week. Pretty much a done deal, right?
Yes, pretty much a done deal, I would say. I know that you were sitting in on the hearing today and, you know, following along on Twitter. Seems like a lot of people like him, and they're ready to move on with the process, and they're ready to have him confirmed.
I don't think I've ever seen a consensus candidate quite like this that united such different ideologies.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I was talking to a Southside alderman afterwards, and he said, you know, what Larry Snelling represents is balance. He has this great balance of being, you know, having the officers' backs because he has been a police officer for 31 years. And he also kind of represents the community. He grew up in Inglewood. And he really, really wants to merge the two and try to figure out, you know, he goes, we need help from the community, but officers also have to do their part. I mean, and I think that's the attraction towards him by many aldermen.
Jim Rose, are you confident Larry Snelling could cure what ails the public safety situation, the police confidence situation, the community confidence situation in Chicago?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think his predecessors before him have tried. But he has a very tough job. I mean, you know, when you're running a huge force like that, and you have a city like Chicago with all of these crime problems that are going on, it is going to take a long time. I mean, I go back to Lori Lightfoot, who was a hardliner, and a lot of people didn't like the way that she, you know, went about her business of telling people what to do and how to do it and everything. But at some point, you've got to take your medicine, and previous mayors before that, they just weren't operating, as far as I'm concerned, the right way. We need hard and fast solutions to it. And I think Mr. Snelling's got a huge job ahead of him.
It kind of represents a compromise here for Mayor Brandon Johnson, and he's kind of made a habit so far of compromising with different views. Melody Mercado, there's a movement now to eliminate tipped minimum wages in the city. That's got steam, but he kind of listened to some of the concerns from industries and tweaked it a little bit. So has this assuaged a lot of concerns?
You know, I think it has definitely cooled some concerns, for example, from the Illinois Restaurant Association. And I think this shows that Mayor Johnson is willing to sit down at the table and compromise, because all evidence showed that this was already a done deal, that the committee was already for it.
He's got the votes. He could pass any bill he wanted.
He could pass it without having to compromise. But sitting down with the Illinois Restaurant Association and listening to some of their concerns and agreeing to do this rollout over 5 years, I think that shows that the mayor is willing to compromise. But at the same time, he's saying this is something that that was a part of my platform, and I'm going to deliver on it. But I want you to be at the table to be able to, you know, work with you in doing this.
It seems like the Restaurant Association still doesn't want this to happen, but 5 years is a lot easier to digest as this rolls out. And then there was someone that testified in city council, a tipped worker, that said, well, wait a second. I work for big tips. I live off of my tips. I'm afraid that this is going to cause folks to not want to tip so much because they know I'm making more. Mm-hmm. What about that?
Well, there was an alderman who I spoke to who said that this is legislation in search of a problem, you know, and so that. You know, I'm not sure, you know, there's historical issues with where tip wages come from, but there are people concerned about it hurting them. It's just hurting workers, you know, by lowering their ultimate salary. But there's a movement to change that, and there you go. And I would guess that the Illinois Restaurant Association wants 5 years, and maybe in the next election somebody else wins and they get a reprieve of some sort.
All right. Well, we've given Mayor Johnson a little bit of praise, but he got a lot of criticism for what happened over the weekend with the Mexican Independence Day celebrations, mm-hmm. shutting down the streets in the Loops. Does he deserve the criticism for what happened?
Well, yes. You know what? What I think is interesting is that he ran as a left wing guy, and he is a left wing guy, but he's governing from the middle. You know, what he did last weekend was what Lori Lightfoot, yep. who was a center right. Yeah. Mayor, and he's
putting the bridges up.
And she got so much grief for that, mm-hmm. and he did not get as much criticism for that. For what?
Not from the people.
You think
who
the Latino lawmakers and some of the Democratic socialists would have been, hey, what are you doing? And maybe they did, but they just weren't very loud in their criticism.
I think the problem is that they did not have a plan to be able to divert traffic and keep people moving in the right direction. I'll give a perfect example. Mm-hmm. We were coming back from dinner on North Avenue, and we got to where North Avenue and Clybourne is, and they had a huge dump truck on the east, the south side of the street, trying to block traffic from going east. All right. Mm-hmm. So as we're approaching it and we're starting to get through, there was an accident, a Tesla and a Toyota Corolla, because it kept being piecemeal trying to get these people through. So somebody got aggressive, and they got mad because they were sitting there, and all of a sudden, bam, these two cars come together. Now, these two have to deal with their insurance companies, and the traffic stood from Clybourne going west about 15 blocks.
So there was a lot of sitting around and waiting. It didn't seem like there was much of a plan. Now, Melody Mercado, are Latino lawmakers or groups upset with this at all? I mean, there were some maybe op-eds about it, but it seems to have blown over.
I think the ultimate question is, should Mexican Independence Day celebrations have a city-sanctioned event downtown? And I think the answer that a lot of aldermen are looking for is yes. This is something that has happened several years in a row. It's not a surprise. And I think that people were very frustrated that the city had announced they weren't going to do any road closures. And then after everybody was going to plan to come downtown, and we already have gridlock, people planning to make their way, now they can't get there. And so it was the issue of the transparency of being able to say, come, don't come, but also at the same time, we should have something on the city level so that way people can enjoy themselves. Maybe we'll have a little bit more control over that.
There'll be a year to sort of have that debate and see what happens next year. Greg Pratt, I want to get to this great story you broke about the city's treasurer, Melissa Conyers-Irvin. She's in a lot of ethics and legal hot water. The inspector general now has seized her computers as they are part of apparently a serious investigation. Just remind us what kind of issues she's facing right now.
Well, the allegation is that she tried to get a loan from a city depositor, BMO Bank, to benefit her husband's landlord, that she was having staff do personal errands like planning her kids' birthday parties and otherwise just generally misusing government resources. And she denies wrongdoing. She was trying to let it blow over, and then the inspector general came in and seized her computer, which is an extremely aggressive move by the inspector general.
Says that it's a pretty serious investigation.
I've never heard of the city IG.
It sounds
doing
like
that.
An FBI tactic.
It is an FBI tactic by the IG, and so that's a whole mess for her, and she wants to run for Congress. She postponed her
against Danny Davis
her announcement because of our initial story, and now she's trying to fight it out with him. She's, you know, they've got a charm offensive going out. You know, they did an interview which was very tough with our colleague at ABC7, Craig Wall, who did a great job interviewing her. But
and she basically did not deny the bank part of it. She did not deny that these folks were doing some personal stuff. She just said not on City Time, though.
She's also hired a new chief of staff, Matt McGrath, who worked for Rahm Emanuel and also Lori Lightfoot.
Oh, he's been around. Well, that's
been around, and he may have been the one that's behind getting her out publicly to deny the allegations. Well, but yeah, so she, you know, she's trying to do her best to spin it.
Matt McGrath will be talking to you soon, as we have in the past. All right, Jim Rose, first of all, congratulations on an amazing career. 41 years at ABC7.
You.
You've delivered the sports with gusto and insight and intelligence and entertainment. I want to get to some of the highlights of your career, but first, the lowlights. So the Cubs, they won today, but it's pretty much too little too late.
Yeah, they're on the outside looking in of the wild card teams. Behind Arizona and Philadelphia, they're the third team. So what's got to happen is Arizona and Philadelphia have got to start losing some games, and the Cubs basically have to just win out. I mean, I thought 2 weeks before I left, which was September 1st, I thought that they had a good chance to win the National League Central Division, but then they faltered, and they can't seem to pick themselves up, even though they did win today. But,
how many times have we seen this
I've
in the past?
I've seen it 40-something times.
40-something How many times have we seen a Bears team in complete dysfunction? Oh. First of all, out of nowhere, the defensive coordinator, Alan Williams, decides he resigns. There's all these wild rumors all over social media. What is behind his resignation?
I'm just going to take what the team has said right now as far as health issues are concerned. I mean, he's 53 years old. I'm not sure if it's with his family or if it's something that he is going through. But I wish him the best. And they've got a huge dilemma. I don't know how Matt Eberflus is going to be able to beat Kansas City this week trying to run a sideline and call defensive signals. I mean,
and this defense hasn't been able to stop anybody. Mediocre quarterbacks they couldn't touch.
The Justin Fields thing is really sad because he made such a stride last year. But that offense is predicated on him making no mistakes. You can't make any mistakes. And he basically was trying to run this offense sitting back and doing what the coaches are telling him to do, as opposed to just doing what he naturally should be able to do.
And he kind of alluded to that, and then he walked it back. So is he in his head, and can he get out of his head and just play that backyard ball that he wants to play?
I think he can. One of the situations he has is with his wide receivers. I mean, Chase Claypool was supposed to be one of the guys that came in here. DJ Moore, you know, he's not getting the ball enough to him. So they've got a crisis of conscience right now. And I don't think it's going to be solved. And in a division where Aaron Rodgers is gone, he's out of here.
Right.
You know, and you got Minnesota stumbling around over here. Detroit's probably going to win the division.
The arrogance that Bears fans had going into that home opener, and then they just kind of walk out with that similar dejected feeling. So you came in 82 to ABC7. You started in Berlin, as you were telling me. You've been to Syracuse and Providence, Rhode Island. 82, right before the rise of the Bears.
Yeah.
10 years before the rise, well, 5 years before Michael Jordan, it's safe to say, was there anything like covering those two teams?
It was unbelievable. And my assignment in 84 was to cover the Bulls. Our news director at the time decided that we were going to cover our sports teams.
And you were probably like, oh, God, do I have to?
No. So we had Mike Adamley, Tim Weigel, Brad Palmer, and myself. Brad covered the Bears. Tim and Mike went back and forth between the Cubs and the Sox. Nobody, and then all three of them with the Blackhawks, nobody wanted the Bulls because the Bulls were David Greenwood and Gene Banks and Enos Watley and, you know, that kind of crew.
And after we watched this documentary, we learned that there was something called the Traveling Cocaine Circus, or at least Michael Jordan talked about before Jordan came in.
That lasted one season. It was an exhibition game in Peoria.
Okay.
Michael was a rookie,
right,
and he was looking for his – they were staying at, you know, one of the motels there because they were playing a preseason game in Peoria. And he's knocking on doors for, hey, where's all my teammates? Where's all my – because he wants to be a good teammate. And he walked into this room, and it was a blue haze of some marijuana or whatever and all this other stuff, and he completely turned and walked out.
So that you're in the beginning of this wild ride to watch the greatest player to ever play, the greatest dynasty to ever play.
How it happened was this. In 84, after they drafted him, they had the U.S. Olympic basketball tryouts at Indiana University in Bloomington. Bobby Knight was the coach of that team. At that point in my career, we had unfettered access to everything. We could stay in practice and film anything. So Barkley, Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan, who never played against each other in college, were talking trash to each other. Barkley's going, I can stop you anytime I want. I'm the round mound of rebound. But to make this story real quick, Michael put a move on him about 7 feet from the basket where Michael went around Barkley. And as the two went up, Barkley being the heavier of the two started to come down. Michael went around him, still in the air, and dunked the ball on the other side of the basket. And I said, oh, my God, I looked at the tape. Does Chicago realize what they have? Because the old story was, who's the only person to hold Michael Jordan under 20 points in college? Do you know the answer? His coach, Dean Smith.
Yeah. Took him out. Right.
Well, they had such a structured offense.
Right.
And so I became friendly with him, and I started following him around and going to all the practices, the games, and it all culminated on June 11, 1991.
All right. I could listen to this all night, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Greg Pratt, Sarah Schulte, Melody Mercado, and Jim Rhodes. And that is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and the Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. And Chicago Stories is back. Join us tonight at 8 for the season premiere, Angels Too Soon, The School Fire of 58. And watch new episodes of Chicago Stories Friday nights at 8 on WTTW and streaming on the PBS app. Explore the website now at WTTW.com/Chicago Stories. And now for the Week in Review, I'm Paris Schutz. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and see you at 10 for Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. You know, Jim, I bet you long for the days where you had that access, because now everything's so controlled.
Yes.
The PR people spin everything that the athletes say.
Well, they control it all because they want to control the message. Mm. So, yeah, I came along the golden age.
And Michael Jordan was so great with the media, too. He always talked to them, and he was so eloquent.
Well, his mom and dad had a lot to do with that. Mm. Yeah.
So you got to know them.
Oh, absolutely. Dolores Jordan gave me a very nice tribute in my goodbye. And we've had dinner a few times, her and my wife and everybody. And she's just a wonderful person.
She is.
Watch the movie Air, you'll see how it all happened.
Amazing person, amazing person. So influential in so many athletes.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm whose attorneys embrace a culture of philanthropy and service by volunteering their time, expertise, and guidance to help others in the greater Chicago community.